Be'ezras Hashem Yisbarech, we are embarking on a journey through one of the more complex sichas in Likutei Sichas, Chilek Tazayin, first sicha to Parshas Bo. It's a fundamental sicha because it deals with one of the yesoidos that comes up repeatedly in the Rebbe's Torah, and that is the correlation between the inyanim, the way they are lemaila, and the way they are nishtal shel lemata. The fact that everything we experience in this physical universe is really a reflection of a parallel reality that exists in the spiritual realms, and it's because of the way things are, lemaila, that we experience them in certain ways, lemata. Of course, this topic was addressed by the Rebbe in many contexts. The backdrop in this sicha is the idea of Brichas Hachama and Inyanim of Kiddush HaChodesh, which I discussed in Parshas Bo. In fact, this sicha was said on Achron Shel Pesach Tavshin Yud Gimel, one day before the first Brichas Hachama of the Rebbe's Nesias. Chav Gimel Nisan Yisro Chag HaPesach Tavshin Yud Gimel was Wednesday, Brichas Hachama. And during the Fabrengens of that Tkufa, one can see that the Rebbe was dealing extensively with the topic of Brichas Hachama, Sai being Mevar the Minhagim Minagel Lepoyol, and Sai explaining the Toichen of Brichas Hachama, Al Pi Nigla and Al Pi Chassidus. And this sicha is a result of one of those Fabrengens from Achron Shel Pesach. This sicha, in fact, was Muga twice. Once, as we have it here in Yiddish, in Chilek Tazayin for Shabbos Parshas Bo, Tavshin Lamites, as one of the weekly likutim that would come out every Shabbos. And then 2 years later, in preparation for the second Brichas Hachama of the Rebbe's Nesias, on Dalet Nisan Tavshin Mem Aleph, the Rebbe was once again Magia de Sicha, this time in Lashon HaKodesh, and he also made many additions. This is in fact a full sif that was added B'Ksav Yad Kodesh, which we will, Be'ezus Hashem, learn when we get to that point in the Sicha. I'll borrow from the Hebrew version of the Sicha, which is printed in the Hosafos to Chilek Chaf Beis in the back of the Likutei Sichas. There it wasn't Muga as one of the Shabbos Likutim. It was Muga specially for Birchas Hachama. Now, what makes this Sicha difficult is not so much the thrust and the main beer of the Sicha, but again, the fact that it's based on or centers around Inyanim of Kiddush HaChodesh. These are topics that are unfamiliar to most laymdim. Every year when we come to Hilchos Kiddush HaChodesh and the Rambam during Shlesh HaPrakim, many of us struggle with understanding the basic astronomical calculations. And here too, without adequate knowledge about the technical workings of the Kiddush HaChodesh sugyas, it's obviously very difficult to navigate the sicha. So what we'll do here is, in this first shir, we'll just give a hakdama of all the necessary pieces of information, the building blocks that are required to successfully make it through the sicha. And then, in the coming shirim, we'll go through the sicha itself. I know in other iyun shirim that I've given in the past, I've stayed more in the areas that I wanted to be ma'ayin in, the ha'aris, or certain pieces in the sicha, but Be'ezus Hashem, and this time, we will go through the entire sicha, the pnim and the ha'aris, because the entirety of it will give the full picture to those learning along with us. So, by way of introduction, let us cover some of the Kiddush HaChodesh basics. It's important to say that what I'm going to be saying obviously comes from the Rambam and Kiddush HaChodesh and other places, but I am simplifying it so that we only are getting the info that's relevant to the Sicha. I'm going to be leaving out many other parts of the Cheshbonos that the Rambam talks about, and also talking more extensively about things that the Rambam doesn't treat so much, like the Inyanim of the Tkufas, as we'll soon see, because that's very relevant to this Sicha. So first and foremost, we start off with the rule that the Rambam lays down in Hilchos Yesodei HaTorah Perek Gimel, which is that Torah believes in the geocentric model. Geocentric meaning that the Earth is in the center of the entire planetary system, and all the planets, the sun, moon, the stars, and all the galaxies are orbiting around the Earth. That's the position al-Pi Halacha, and as the Rebbe would explain, it also has mystical connotations. It's a reflection of the idea of Dira B'Tachteinim, the fact that the ultimate tachlis of all of creation is this world, and therefore it actually matches that our world lies in the center. Earth, of course, is a ball, and in terms of direction, we talk about the top and the bottom being the north and the south poles, and the equator, which is the line that divides the circle in half, is due east and due west, depending which way around the equator you're heading. When you're going from right to left, you're always going west, from east to west. And when you're going left to right, you're always going due east. The Rambam further tells us in Hilchos Yesodei HaTorah that there is what he calls the Galgal Hachi, or we know it today as the Galgal Hayomi. There is a metaphorical sphere that encompasses all of existence. and is constantly pushing all of the stars and the planets and the galaxies around the world, around Earth, from east to west, every 24 hours, completing a full revolution. Of course, mathematically, every circle is divided into 360 degrees. Those are the terminologies that we'll be using now. So it pushes everything from east to west, 360 degrees. At the same time, each planet, the main ones that are circling the Earth, have their own Galgal. They're contained within their own metaphorical sphere, which is turning them in a different direction from west to east at their own pace, much slower pace. So think about it as we always talk about the famous analogy of a person on a boat. If you're on a boat, the boat's going eastward at 70 miles an hour, and you're walking on the boat westward. So while the boat has moved a certain amount of space, you haven't moved the full extent because while the boat was moving eastward, you were walking westward. In the same way, the sun and the moon, and those are the ones that we're going to be focusing on, because the truth is it applies to every star, as the Rambam says, but for our conversation, the sun and the moon have their own backwards circle that they're going on. So again, while the Galgal Hayomi is pushing all of existence from due east to due west, which is why we experience every day watching sunrise to sunset, that's the Galgal Hayomi's push of all of the planetary system. At the same time, the sun itself and the moon itself are going backwards from west to east. How fast are they going? The Rambam tells us in the Chizkidush HaChodesh, the sun is going about 1 degree per day, while the moon is going much faster, 13 degrees per day. So at the end of every day, you have a difference of 12 degrees between the sun and the moon. And what that means practically is, I know this is an audio shiur, so it's hard for me to give visuals, but if you can, on your own paper, draw a circle and then put a ball at any given point on the circle, if throughout one day that ball is going to be pushed by the Galgal Hayomi all around back to its original position, but because on its own it's going backwards 1 degree, so in effect, after 24 hours, the sun, which would be that ball, has only went around the world 359 degrees, not the full 360. The moon, since it's going 13 degrees backwards, so if the ball on the paper would be the moon, at the end of the day, the Galgal Hayomi should have pushed it back all the way to its original position, but it's going to be 13 degrees short of that, 347 degrees, because it's approximately 13 degrees traveled from west to east on its own path. Let's zoom into the moon for a second. If the moon travels west to east on its own orbit at a speed of 13 degrees per day, so how long will it take to get around the entire Earth, the full 360 degrees? So if you do the math, it takes about 27 days. However, we don't call that a month yet. We don't call that the moon having made a full revolution around the Earth. Why? Because during those 27 days, the sun, on its slower pace of 1 degree per day, has advanced from west to east at about 27 degrees. It'll take another 2 days or so for the moon to catch up with the sun. That's what we call a month. When the moon has made a full revolution around the Earth and caught up to the sun, now we have a month. This happens, as the Rambam tells us in Hilchos Kiddush HaChodesh, every 29 days, 12 hours, and 793 chalakim. Chalakim are the halachic terminology for dividing an hour. Today we divide an hour into minutes and seconds. In halacha, we divide every hour into 1,080 units. And it's a great number because it's divisible by every number between 1 and 10. So for mathematical purposes, it has a very ease of access when you use that number. So 29 days, 12 hours, and 793 out of 1,080 chalakim. That's how often the moon makes a full revolution from west to east around the Earth and catches up to the sun. This is why every month we have a moilad, because as the moon gets further and further from the sun, the 12-degree gap that's happening every day, it becomes more and more visible. As it gets closer to the sun, it disappears, being swallowed up in the sun's light. And at the beginning of a new month, Maylad, the moon is reborn, and the journey begins again. What about the sun? The moon is making this turn every month. The sun, because it's going only 1 degree about per day, how long does the sun take to get around the Earth, a full revolution of 360 degrees? So For the purposes of our introduction, we're going to start with what's called Tkufas Shmuel. Shmuel's opinion brought down in the Gemara in Masech Te'erevin that the Tkufa Malashan Hakafa, circle, the time it takes for the sun to complete a full revolution around the earth is 365 and a quarter days. Exactly. 365 days and 6 hours. By the way, the Julian secular calendar as we know it today follows the sun. That's why for them, each year is 365 days. And that's why every 4 years, we have a February 29th, because the four quarters accumulate after 4 years, and we have to have another day. So we have the moon making a circle around the earth every 29 and a half days. We have the sun making a full circle around the earth every 365 and a quarter days. Now, I need to repeat again, just for clarity for those that are first-timers at this, this is not what we're seeing every day happen, sunrise to sunset. That's the Galgal HaYomi's influence pushing the entirety of reality from east to west. We're talking now about the sun and the moon's own orbits on their own pace the other way, from west to east. Now comes a very, very important factor, and that is that the Galgal HaYomi that pushes all of existence is going from east to west, but it's going from due east to due west, which means it's following the exact path of the equator. If we could imagine the earth as a ball hanging in the middle of the universe, the top is the North Pole, the bottom is the South Pole. Draw a line exactly through the halfway point. That's the level at which all of reality is rotating. However, the sun and the moon's own orbit on their own Galgal is actually off balance by 23.5 degrees off of the equator. So in other words, the sun is making a circle, but if you could imagine in your head a flat circle and then another circle crisscrossing it at a bit of an angle, a 23.5 degree angle, you will see that the sun traveling on its own path west to east is kind of going a little bit higher above the equator and then coming back to the equator, then going lower than the equator, and then coming back to meet the equator. Why is that important to know? Because what that means is that at different points of the year, as the sun is reaching different points on its own orbit, it is closer and further at the same time from different parts of the earth. So let's say when the sun is exactly at the point of the equator, 0 degrees, let's call that. Right now it's matching the equator. It's equidistant, which means it's as far as it is from the northern hemisphere as it is from the southern hemisphere. But as the sun climbs and ultimately reaches 90 degrees, now it's much closer to the northern hemisphere than it is to the southern hemisphere. That's why during that time of year, for us on the northern hemisphere, it's summer. Sun's rays reach our part of the earth more powerfully. Versus the southern hemisphere, it's winter. When the sun continues going around its path and gets to 180 degrees, now it's again aligned with the equator. It's again equidistant from the northern and southern hemisphere. That's why we have fall. When the sun hits 270 degrees, now it's much closer to the southern hemisphere and it's summer there versus where it's winter in the northern hemisphere. So we can see that the sun's path along its own orbit creates the seasons of the year. These in halacha are called tkufas. I know I said before tkufas Shmuel, that was referring to a full hakafa, a full revolution. Here we're talking about tkufas in the sense of seasons. In halacha, we divide seasons into four seasons. The first quarter of the sun's path is called tkufas Nisan. The second quarter is called Tkufas Tammuz, the third quarter is called Tkufas Tishrei, and the fourth quarter is called Tkufas Tevis. And these Tkufas begin when the sun reaches the beginning point of that season, of that quarter. So when the sun is at 0 degrees, the exact point where it meets the equator, that's when Tkufas Nisan begins. As the sun reaches 90 degrees, that's when Tkufas Tammuz begins. The sun reaches 180 degrees, that's when Tkufas Tishrei begins. And when the sun reaches 270 degrees, that's when Tkufas Tevis begins. Now, although there are four tkufas, for our context and for our sikha, what's going to be relevant is only tkufas Nisan. So we're only worried about when does the sun re-enter 0 degrees on its path. Incidentally, I should say, just to clarify, how do we know, looking from Earth, how do we identify where the sun is on its own path? So the sages and the astronomers of old have invented what's called the ecliptic or the mazoles. It's a belt of stars that follows the sun's path 23.5 degrees off of the equator. And by identifying certain groups or certain clusters of stars and the sun is against their backdrop, we can say, oh, the sun is at this point in its path. The sun is at that point in its path. These are called the 12 mazales. Mazal tleh is the mazal of a sheep. It's a group of stars that looks like sheep. Mazal sher is a group that looks like ox. Mazal ta'imim, ones that look like twins, etc., etc. So when the sun enters mazal tleh, when the sun enters 0 degrees on its ecliptic, that's when Tkufas Nisan begins. So, we have the sun, we have the moon. They're both being pushed by the Galgal Hayomi, a full revolution, 360 degrees from east to west, on their own path, though they're on their own pace. One is going 1 degree per day, one is going 13 degrees per day, meaning that the moon gets around the earth every month. The word month comes from the Lashon moon, and the sun gets around the earth every year. The question is, when creating a calendar for human beings to operate on, a calendar of times, a schedule to know where we're holding in different times of the year, which planet, which star is going to be our guiding factor? Are we going to be guided by the sun or are we going to be guided by the moon? Now, it's very important to realize this. If you're following the solar year, so the only unit that really matters is the full year, the full 365 and a quarter days that it takes for the sun to get around the earth. If a person were to say, I'm following a solar calendar, but I'm going to have 12 months in my calendar, what that means is he's picked arbitrarily random months, dates, where he's divided the 365-day path of the sun into 12 parts, which is exactly what the secular calendar does. Because there's nothing specific that happens to the sun every 30 days in terms of its relationship to the earth. It's just that if we take the full total, 365 and a quarter, and we divide it into 12 parts, we'll get 30 or 31 days on average to be each month. Li'idach gisa, if we follow the moon fully, so the only important unit of time is the month, because that's when the moon gets around the earth. A lunar year has no meaning. There's nothing special that happens when the moon circles the earth 12 times versus 13 times versus 11 times. Nevertheless, because the 12-month year has become a big thing, some communities, like Islam, for example, the Muslim calendar, go fully lunar, which means they divide their months every 29 or 30 days. And after 12 revolutions of the moon, they say, oh, a year is over. But when it comes to the Jewish calendar, this creates a complexity. And that's how it always is with Jews. Everything's got to be complicated. Because if you do the math, how many days does it take for the moon to do 12 revolutions around the earth? If it takes one revolution, 29 and a half days, do the math, 12 times will take 354 days, 8 hours, and 876 halakim. This is the number that the Rambam gives us in Hilchos Kiddush HaChodesh. How many days does it take for the sun to complete its year? 365 and a quarter days. You can see that there's a difference of 11 days between the two. If you wait for a full solar year to elapse and a full lunar year to elapse, at the end of the lunar year, there's still 11 more days till the sun finishes its journey. In other words, by the time a lunar year finishes, you haven't yet made it through all the seasons of the year. There's still 11 more days till the final season finishes. Hence, if you only follow a lunar calendar, like the Muslims do, your months, month number one, month number two, month number three, etc., will not always be in the same season. Because at the end of 354 days, you declare a year. Now, for you, month one starts again. But it's still the end of the fourth season. The first season of the sun hasn't begun yet. Fast forward another year, fast forward another 2 years, fast forward another 3 years, you're 22 days behind, 33 days behind, 44 days behind. By the time your lunar year is finishing and month one is starting, it's still the middle of the third season. And so on and so forth. And that's Takawai, as the Ibn Ezra, which the Rebbe is Metzayin to, in the beginning of the Sikha, one of the hardest. Ibn Ezra points out that Ramadan, the famous 40-day fast that the Arabs celebrate, happens at a different point in time each year. Because it's always at the same fixed 40 days in their year, but in terms of the seasons, it's always changing. Now, for the Jewish people, we can't do that. Why not? Because besides for the fact that Yisrael Mein and Levana, that it's very clear that we are lunar people and we follow the moon's path to dictate our calendar, there's a special rule that cannot be ignored. And that rule is that Pesach has to be celebrated in the springtime. To use language that we've been discussing, Pesach has to be after the sun has entered 0 degrees, after the sun has begun its first season. So, if we completely ignore the sun's path and we only make a lunar calendar, our seasons are going to get pushed back. And Nisan, which is in the middle of the seventh month, yes, the first time round it'll be around that season time, but then the second time round it's going to be 11 days behind, and the third time round it's going to be 11 days behind further, and the fourth day and so on, until we could end up celebrating Nisan, that time in Nisan, in the third or second season. Rainy season, winter season, fall season. It won't always be in the spring. But the Pasuk says, Shomer es Chodesh Aviv. Pesach must be celebrated in the spring. So therefore, the Chachamim introduced the concept of a leap year, a Shana Mulubaris, which means, once we see that the difference between the lunar year and the solar year has accumulated to a point where we could add another month, we do so. And by adding that other month, we balance out the lunar and solar years, so we always keep Pesach falling out in the spring. How often do we add a leap year? Well, as often as it takes. Let's do the math ourselves. At the end of 1 year, it's 365 for the sun, 354 for the moon. We have an 11-day difference. At the end of the second year, we now have a 22-day difference. At the end of the third year, we now have a 33-day difference. Well, that means that the third year is the time that it's appropriate to add another month. How long is a month? 30 days. So we've caught up an extra 30 days, but we're still 3 days behind. At the end of the fourth year, we have the 11-day difference plus the 3 that we have to factor in from last cycle, so we now have 14 days. At the end of the fifth year, it's another 11 days, now it's 25. At the end of the sixth year, it's another 11 days, it's 36 approximately. Well, now it's time to add another month. We put in 30 days, but we're still 6 days behind. At the end of the seventh year, we have another 11 days. Now it's already a total of 17. And at the end of the eighth year, with another 11 days, we have 28. Now, even though we don't have 30 days difference, we put in another month in the eighth year. The eighth year becomes a Ibriyar. And when we start the next year's calculations, we factor in that now we're 2 days ahead. At the end of the ninth year, we won't be 11 days behind, we'll just be 9 days behind. End of the 12th year, now it's another 11, it's 20 days. At the end of the 13th year, it's 31, and now it's time to add in another Ibriyar. And so on and so forth. At the end of the 14th year, it's time for an Ibriyar. At the end of the 17th, it's time for an Ibriyar. And then at the end of the 19th, it's time for an Ibriyar. And if you do the math, every 19 years, the sun's and the moon's paths will almost smooth themselves out. This is called a machzer, a full cycle, because, do the math, 19 solar years, 365 days and a quarter times 19 is 6,939 days and three quarters. 19 lunar years, where you've done 12-month years and 7 13-month years, you've added in Ibriyars 7 times, 235 lunar months, equals the same amount of days, 6,939 days, but not a full three quarters, 16 hours and 595 chalakim, leaving a remainder of 1 hour and 485 chalakim difference. It's a tiny difference. At the end of 19 years, where the sun is and where the moon is have basically smoothed themselves out. That 1 hour and 485 chalakim of remainder is called the She'edis HaMachzer, the leftover between the sun and the moon that happens at the end of every 19 years. Now, it seems like a very small remainder, but it does accumulate. After 19 years, it's 1 hour. After 38 years, it's 2 hours. After 57 years, now it's 3 hours, almost four. Start going 50 years, 100 years, 1900 years. At this point in creation, we're after 304 machzerim, 304 units of 19 years plus more, we have a 440-hour difference between the sun and the moon, which is about 18 and a third days. This could accumulate. Now, in Hilchas Kiddush HaChodesh, this difference is unaccounted for. It's not negeya to seeing the new moon. However, there is another option. As I mentioned before, this idea that the solar year is 365 and a quarter days is what's called Tkufas Shmuel. That was Shmuel's opinion of how long the solar year takes, i.e. the time it takes for a sun to make a full revolution around the earth. According to the other opinion from the Chachmei Yisrael, this is called Tkufas Rav Ada. Rav Ada Bar Ava was an Amira who held that the solar year is slightly less. than 365 and a quarter. The Rambam gives the exact number in Perek Yud, Vichos Kedesh HaChodesh. It's 365 days and 5 hours, so many chalakim, and he divides chalakim into 76 parts called regoyim. And it comes down to a very, very minute, exact calculation such that at the end of 19 years, it's completely smoothed out. The sun's path and the moon's path are exactly aligned. There is no she'edis. Every machzer, at the end of 19 years, that's like the perfect number when the sun and the moon are completely aligned. I should note, and it's going to come up really later in the sikha, but I'm going to say it now, and if this part flies over your head at this point, don't worry about it, it's going to come up later again. Because according to Rav Ada Bar Ava, the sun and the moon completely align at the end of 19 years, any part of the solar year that we need in the Jewish calendar, most primarily Tkufas, can be converted into Jewish dates. In other words, because we know that at the end of 19 years, it's always going to be the same, we can look back and say, well, you know what? Tkufas Nisan, the time when the sun enters 0 degrees, is always going to be between such a Hebrew date and such a Hebrew date. It's never changing, because every 19 years, the pattern repeats itself. Tkufas Tammuz, the time that the sun enters 90 degrees, will always be between such and such Hebrew dates. Because at the end of the day, the solar and lunar calendar will realign. However, according to Shmuel, since at the end of every 19 years, the sun and the moon haven't fully aligned, there's always an hour difference, which is only accumulating as every machzer completes. Tkufas, the time when the sun is at a given degree in its orbit, can never be converted fully into a Jewish date. Because maybe in this machzer, it's going to be between this day in Nisan, or this day in Tishrei. But 25 machzerim later, 25 hours of difference later, now it's going to be one day later. In other words, that 1 hour and 485 chalakim is making the dates of the tkufas be pushed off progressively. The time that the sun enters 0 degrees every 19 years is getting later and later. And this leads to the question that the Rebbe presents right in the beginning of the sikha, which is that the rule, the whole reason why Yiddishkeit incorporates the solar calendar and the solar year into our calendar is so that Pesach can fall out in the spring, so that Pesach can always fall out after the sun has entered its Tkufas Nisan, 0 degrees on its ecliptic. But with enough machzorim, because it's getting pushed off progressively by an hour and 485 chalakim, ultimately, Pesach will begin before the Tkufa. Pesach will begin before the sun has entered that amount of 0 degrees. And that's the question that Rebbe is going to be dealing with in the Sicha. Of course, the Rebbe will first begin by suggesting maybe we should follow the Tkufa of Rav Ada, not the Tkufa of Shmuel. That will be rejected, and this will lead to the beauty that develops in this Sicha. That's what I have to present here as far as the introduction. Again, I've only taken from Hilchos Kedesh HaChodesh the parts that are necessary to the understanding of the Sicha. There are other elements that I haven't said yet, that I'm not saying now just because they're going to complicate things, but are going to be relevant later as the Sicha develops. And Ezer Hashem, we will bring them up in due time. But for now, we will leave this as the Hakdama, and Ezer Hashem, in the next year, we will go into the Pnim of the Sicha and the Ha'aris.